From our studio in San Francisco's The Civic Kitchen, this is Salt and Spine.
I like the appeal of baking because there was a formula to it and a precision to it that I really appreciated. And I think that was sort of what got me, because I like being able to innovate, but I like being able to have a firm base that says, like, if you do it like this, you'll be successful, and then you can innovate from there.
Hi there, I'm Brian Hogan Stewart, and you're listening to Salt and Spine, Stories Behind Cookbooks, and you're tuning in today for the second of our baking week in 2019. And today's guests are Chris Taylor and Paul Arguin, authors of The New Pie. Now, by day, Chris and Paul are scientists, doctors at the CDC, but they have spent much of their time baking together. And in fact, the way they met was over a baked good featured in a cookbook by Salt and Spine guest Rose Levy-Barenbaum. We'll hear more about that story in today's episode. Together, they've won more than 600 awards at pie baking contests across the country, and that has led them to publishing their first cookbook, The New Pie. The Atlanta-based couple is known for both innovative flavors and innovative techniques on classic pie flavors. In today's show, we're going to talk with Chris and Paul about how they approach pie baking, the cookbook theme story of how they ended up together, and of course, all about those competitions. Plus, later in today's episode, Salt and Spine friend Kathy Barrow is back to talk about her latest cookbook, When Pies Fly. And of course, we feature recipes from both The New Pie and When Pies Fly, so you can get baking at home. All of that today on this Baking Week episode of Salt and Spine. So let's head now to our studio inside the Civic Kitchen Cooking School in San Francisco, where Chris Taylor and Paul Arguin joined us to talk cookbooks. Hi, Chris. Hi, Paul. Thanks so much for joining us on Salt and Spine.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you. We're so glad to have you to talk about your first cookbook, The New Pie. And I'm so glad you're here, because I really wanted to get you in the studio and have this conversation when I heard how you two met, because obviously we're a show on cookbooks. And I understand your first date over the phone actually revolved around a cookbook by someone we've had on the show, Rose Levy-Barenbaum.
That's correct.
Can you tell us a little bit about how that book brought you together?
Sure. Well, we were living apart. So I was living in Atlanta. Chris was still in Pittsburgh. And we were introduced remotely by a mutual friend. And so we started chatting on the phone. And when it seemed that we were hitting it off, one of the things we realized is we had both had fairly extensive cookbook collections.
Okay.
And we had one cookbook in common.
Which was The Cake Bible by Rose Levy-Barenbaum.
Right. Iconic book.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you decide to bake from it together over the phone.
Yeah. So Paul said, you know, let's pick something and we can bake together from it over the phone. And he put it on me to pick something. And I think
I was hoping for something like, oh, let's do a pound cake. Let's do right. something normal.
Right.
And he picks, of course.
I picked the Scarlet Empress.
Which is, explain.
It is a, it's a type of charlotte. So it's a, you make a jelly roll, fill it with, I made homemade raspberry preserves. You roll it up like a jelly roll, slice it into slices. Line the inside of a bowl with those slices, and then you make a Bavarian cream. Uh-huh. You pour that into the mold, covering up all the slices, let it set in the fridge, turn the whole thing upside down, remove the bowl, and you end up with this, you know, semicircle, half sphere bomb of raspberry and sponge cake and Bavarian cream.
And you're making this together over the phone. How long are you on the phone making this?
A few hours is what it took. Yeah. So yeah, we take breaks every now and again. Yeah, certainly when things have to go into the fridge or when the mixer's whirring a little too loud.
Right,
yeah. But it was a lot of fun. And that sort of helped seal it for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you both had cookbook collections already, as you noted. That was your one book in common. But cookbooks were already something you were both interested in.
Yes.
Correct. I was doing a lot more savory cooking and baking.
Okay.
So my go-tos were always, breads and biscuits, cornbreads, things like that.
Sure.
And I was doing a lot of baking. I'd really fallen in love with baking. And one of what I had been doing was I'd made a New Year's resolution for a couple years in a row to bake a new thing every week.
Okay.
So I was really, finding something in these books, something I'd never had before and something I'd never made before or even eaten before, and trying and, getting the equipment, getting the ingredients and making it on my own.
Sure. And I read that food was a part of both of your lives pretty early on, that you both were in the kitchen as kids, that you both had parents who sort of were wanting you and requiring you maybe to cook in some way.
Yeah, certainly for me. I had a single mom, and so she'd be working, and both my sister and I, when we were home, we'd start making dinner. So yeah, we were as soon as we could, you know, we were in the kitchen cooking.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you were both sort of exposed to food and cooking at an early age, but it was never really something you thought about doing professionally. And actually, we'll come back to your careers in a little bit, but it was something that you sort of did as a hobby for a while.
Absolutely. It was something we enjoy. Well, certainly if you enjoy eating, which we do,
right.
It helps to know how to cook. And so, yeah, when you're suddenly in the mood for that special dish, it's a good idea to know how to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I like the learning part of it, going through the books and learning about new ingredients or new techniques and sort of, being able to make something from that, I thought was really neat. Cause, growing up, we had a lot of traditional American foods. And so, some maybe odd things, but I think for the most part, pretty much a standard American diet. So, doing a lot of baking outside of, what we would do with, box cake mixes or cookie recipes from the back of a bag, it just was really appealing to me because it's something I'd never experienced growing up.
Right. Now, you both went into science fields, into careers in science. Paul, you're a physician.
Correct.
Yeah. And Chris,
I'm an epidemiologist.
Epidemiologist. Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought. And you both work for the CDC. Is that right?
Up until recently. I retired on April 1st.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah. So yeah, I was there for 22 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did your interest in science and your careers in science contribute to sort of drawing you towards the baking side of the culinary world? It's a very scientific field.
Yeah, it has certainly colored our baking, definitely. Okay. Yeah, so it is a scientific field, but I think that often puts people off to say that baking is so sciencey.
Right.
Basically, we do the science for you. People shouldn't be afraid that they need to be scientists themselves in order to produce some great baked goods.
Sure.
I like the appeal of baking because, especially learning from Rose Levy Barenbaum, there was a formula to it and a precision to it that I really appreciated. And I think that was sort of what got me because I like being able to innovate, but I like being able to have a firm base that says, if you do it like this, you'll be successful, and then you can innovate from there. So
right.
I think that's what really drew me to a lot of it.
Yeah, you like that structure.
Yeah.
And how did pie become the focus for the two of you?
Well, we bake a lot of things.
Uh-huh. Still, to this day.
To this day, yeah. And we started doing the very first thing because we do some competitive baking, and so that the first contest we did was pie.
Okay.
And we branched out into other competitions. So we do state and local fairs, but we'll do cookies and cakes and candies and yeast breads and quick breads and pies.
And then when we found the National Pie Championship, so that was, a really fun contest that after the first time we went, we really enjoyed going to it.
Uh-huh.
And so we wanted to do very well at it. So we put a lot of focus and energy into developing new and better ways to make pie. And that's sort of grown into this book.
Yeah. Which we'll come back to, but I want to stay on this competitions part. So, so the first competition you ever entered was a small local competition, right?
Yeah.
North of Atlanta, maybe?
Yeah, just north of Atlanta, maybe about an hour north.
Okay. And you'd been baking together as a hobby for a while at this point?
A few years.
Yeah. 2 years?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so what prompted the decision to drive north and enter this contest?
It's funny. We don't really remember anymore.
Okay.
I had found the event online and I said, this seems like something.
A fun thing to do on a weekend.
Yeah.
Sure.
Uh-huh. We hadn't made a lot of pies at that point. I probably had made less than 10 pies in my lifetime at that point.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we just sort of did it, as a lark, going, let's try this, and then we can stop off, somewhere on the way home. There's some fun outlet shops up there and, make a day of it.
Right.
Yeah. So we each entered a pie. Paul entered they had two categories, sweet and savory. Uh-huh. So Paul entered a savory pie. It was a spicy Caribbean beef pie.
Right.
And I entered I called it summer strawberry pie.
Okay.
In the sweet category. And I ended up winning first place in the sweet category.
And how did that feel?
It felt great. Yeah. Yeah. Cause it was completely unexpected.
Right.
It was great and going, I think we this was a lot of fun. And so that's, you know, after that, then we were like, oh, what other competitions are there?
And then we found a county fair and gave that a whirl. And it kept growing.
Yes. Yeah. And now you're up to how many awards? 600 something?
Over 600
Over 600.
Between us, yeah.
Yeah, incredible. I believe there was also a Paula Deen impersonator at this first contest. Is that right? Did I read that?
Yes. And we still don't quite understand it. It was one of those, you do a double take, a triple take. It's like, well, why is she a Paula Deen impersonator here helping officiate this pie contest?
And we weren't sure, because the first year, I think, we were just kind of talking about it the way home going, she seemed a lot like Paula Deen. Like, do you think they hired her for the event? Or do you think she just comes that way?
Right.
But then the second year, there was like a photo published and she was in the photo and it said Paula Deen impersonator. And I was like, okay, well, clearly this is her thing.
Yeah, you know? I guess so. Wonder if they're still using her.
I know. We wondered that too.
Yeah. And I read you don't compete against each other anymore. Is that right? Did you ever in any contests?
Well,
never have.
But, so the only time we ever really compete against each other is if we're lucky enough to have already won blue ribbons in our respective categories so that we're now going head to head for best in show.
Okay.
So that's our only sort of, and we love that.
Yeah.
That's the kind of competition we love. But for the most part, we always stay in our own lanes.
Yeah. And you, who's savory? Who's sweet?
Paul's savory.
You're generally more of the savory.
Yes.
Yeah. That's awesome. So leading us into the cookbook, then the new pie, you write in the book, actually, you thank Kim Severson in the New York Times for, you say, starting this book adventure for us. So you're entering all these competitions, you're winning hundreds of awards for your pies. Mm-hmm. How does the cookbook come into the mix?
So, in 2017, we entered the National Pie Championship as, I think that was maybe our fifth year.
Okay.
And
can you give us a little more context too? We mentioned just the National Pie Contest, but what is that? What does that look like?
Yeah. So it's sponsored by a group, the American Pie Council.
Okay.
For the last 15 years or so, it's been in Orlando, Florida.
Okay.
Usually in mid, late April. There's several divisions. There's, commercial pies that are entered. So like your grocery store chains, your Mrs. Fields.
Sure.
And then there's, I think some independent bakeries also enter. And then the two divisions we're most familiar with, there's an amateur division and a professional division.
Uh-huh.
And so you come down to Florida, you find a place to bake. We get like an Airbnb. You bake your pies. They're delivered first thing on a Saturday morning and they're judged all day. And then there's, you know, fun throughout the day, some pie-based education, some games, and an awards ceremony in the evening.
Okay. And how many pies are we talking here?
For us or total?
Total. Like you're usually making, I think I read maybe 15 or so, roughly.
Yeah, 15 between us.
Uh-huh. How many are you competing against?
Ooh, I want to say, I think an amateur and professional total between them is around 400. I'm not sure about commercial.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of commercial categories.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you enter, you go again in 2017.
Yes.
And that's leading to the book.
Yeah. So, so we were in the amateur division and I had won a couple blue ribbons. Paul had won a couple blue ribbons. And then at the end, they announced, you know, the best of the blue ribbons, which was best in show.
Uh-huh.
And I won best of show that year for the peanut butter checkerboard pie.
Okay.
And
congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a stunning pie.
Thank you. It was a great pie. I love peanut butter and chocolate. So
yeah.
It's just an incredible thing. And so every year, the American Pie Council puts out a press release. I mean, it just so happened that year they wrote about both of us, because we both bake.
Uh-huh.
And the press release was picked up by Kim Severson at the New York Times. Mm-hmm. And she did a piece on us. And we were on the front page of the food section of the Times in July. And then after that, we started getting phone calls.
Yeah. Multiple phone calls.
Yeah. So we got, initially from, publishers and then from agents.
Uh-huh.
And so, oh, geez, this is becoming a thing. And then it worked. And so we ended up getting a publishing contract to write a cookbook.
And was a cookbook on your mind before that moment?
I always loved cookbooks and it was something that I think years ago I had thought, oh, it'd be fun to do because I love cookbooks so much. It'd be great to write one, but
it was really a fantasy, really. I couldn't think of a way to make that real.
Right.
Yeah. And there was, and I think at the time, you know, like years ago, maybe you had to be like a professional chef. And then it was sort of like the area of like the Food Network food stars were all getting books. And then it was sort of the area of social media. So it's sort of like you had to have like huge social media following to get a book. So it was sort of something that I kind of thought, we're not really there, but we still like them. But it so happened that, you know, our publisher, who's great, you know, saw something in us, which we're forever grateful for, and we were able to do the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So I want to dive in a little bit to the book now. Let's start with where every pie starts crust. Mm-hmm. You borrow a quote in the book from Jeffrey Steingarten in his book, The Man Who Ate Everything, where he describes a perfect crust as being, I think it's seven things, right? Yeah. Flaky, airy, light, tender, crisp, well-browned, and good tasting. Talk a little bit more about your crust, and you have variations, obviously, on crusts in the book, but talk a little bit more about your crust recipes and how you sort of approach dough. I think a lot of people have, our former guest, Kathy Barrow, calls it dough phobia. A lot of people have dough phobia.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So I guess I'll start. We anchored the pie section with that quote just because people like to say, how to make the perfect crust. And I want to get, first of all, people to agree on what is the target you're aiming for. Some people, like, they think the perfect crust is, that really chewy, rubbery, doughy thing like my grandmother used to make.
Sure.
That's the perfect crust. I think, I will not teach you how to make that.
Right.
Yeah. Or, you know, something rock hard and, you know, crumbly.
Right.
No. So that's the goal that we want. And I think the problem that most people experience when they're trying to make crust is that I think most instructions that are out there are too vague, imprecise, and sort of using flowery language rather than some precise instructions on how to do it properly.
Yeah, I've said a couple of times, I think sometimes a lot of cookbook authors who try to teach pie dough have done a disservice. Obviously, not every cookbook author, but there are some that, you know, talk about, you go, you know, you add some unspecific amount of water, like between, you know, 3 and 8 tablespoons, and mix it in until the dough starts to come together and it looks right. And you're thinking, well, I've never made pie dough before, or I've never made it successfully, so I'm not the best judge of what looks right.
Exactly.
And if I've never worked with dough, I'm not great on figuring out, is this enough water? Is this too much water? I think people are scared into making it too dry because they don't want to make it too moist because then they think they're going to overwork it. And so one of the things that we do to address that is, we try to instruct the reader to weigh their ingredients, especially for the pie crust.
Right.
And so we found that if you weigh your flour, because pie dough is simple. It's basically flat, fat, flour, and water. Mm-hmm. And so if you weigh your flour, you weigh your fat, and you weigh your water, which is more precise than using it, you know, just in a glass measuring cup, you will get a reliable formula for dough that can be repeatedly relied upon to make an excellent pie crust.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's going back to the science of baking, right? I mean, even to mention Kathy Barrow again, she in her book actually has the exact number of pulses in her food processor to get the pie dough just as you want it. So there is sort of a difference in the way you approach recipes with that precision as compared to some of the older recipes maybe, or other recipes that are sort of airy in that language.
And it makes a world of difference. It really does. Because even if you measure your flour, if you're really packing in your flour into your cup, and then you're putting in some quantity of water that you don't really know.
Right.
I mean, the range of product you're going to end up with in the end can be from dry and crumbly to a soupy mess.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you put apple cider vinegar in some of your doughs. What's the secret of what does that do?
Couple little things.
Yeah. Initially, for one, we found when we added it, it makes a better dough.
Okay.
And the question was why? What's it doing in there?
Yeah.
So we do add a little bit of baking powder, which is something we picked up from Rosalie Barenbaum. Mm-hmm. That adds a little bit of puff between those crispy layers, makes it seem a little airier. And we found the vinegar might be interacting with that, even though baking powder is, you know, has its own acid, so maybe not necessarily. Initially, we thought that maybe the vinegar was inhibiting some gluten formation, but I know others have said, like Kenji has said, that actually gluten is formed in a slightly acidic environment, so it's probably not doing anything. It's probably not doing much to make it that acidic. And we also found, and King Arthur Flour has done posts on this, that when you make pie dough with a little bit of vinegar and you don't use your pie dough right away, if you leave it in the fridge for maybe 3 days, if you don't have vinegar, sometimes your dough will start to turn a little gray, which doesn't affect its ability to, you know, become a great pie crust. It just gets a little bit of discolor.
Right.
But if you add the vinegar, it prevents that color change.
Yeah. And it does add a little flavor too.
Yeah. It's a nice little bit of tang. It's only a teaspoon of apple cider vinegar, but it tastes a little better, and I think it works a little better.
We'll be right back with the second half of our conversation with Chris Taylor and Paul Arguin, authors of The New Pie. Recently, I joined Salt and Spine friend Kathy Barrow at the Civic Kitchen, where she was prepping to teach students a few recipes from her latest book, When Pies Fly, handmade pastries from strudels to stromboli, empanadas to knishes. We started by making a rough puff pastry, Kathy's homemade answer to puff pastry that is simple and loads better than store-bought. The trick lies with your stand mixer, which brings the dough together roughly before a series of book folds.
So we're here in the kitchen, at the Civic Kitchen now, with Kathy Barrow, and we're going to make some rough puff pastry, is that right?
Rough puff, that's
okay,
right.
Tell us how you approach this recipe.
Well, rough puff is, instead of beating a block of butter into flour, as you would with a classic puff pastry, we're going to add the flour and the butter in cold cubes,
right.
Some salt, and then cold water and lemon juice, all to the mixer.
All at once.
All at once, okay. And then we're going to let that go. Now it's all together, but it's kind of wet and sloppy, and you can see the pieces of butter still in there. And we're going to put it on the counter with a lot of flour. Don't worry, because it will only take up so much, and when it stops taking up flour, you can brush it away.
Do we want to see chunks of butter?
We do want to see butter in there. Yeah. Just like with pie crust, sure. You want to see little pieces of butter.
Uh-huh.
And so we'll take that book fold and turn it, add more flour if you need to, and then roll it out again to that same size and do another fold. And you're going to do that fold 4 times, and then you're going to chill it, and you're done.
And that's it.
That's it.
That's puff pastry.
Yes, and it goes from being this very messy, sloppy thing that you take out of the mixer, and in 4 turns, it becomes this beautiful, smooth dough.
And puff pastry is just one of the doughs that make up all the handheld pies in Kathy's When Pies Fly. Now, the idea for a book all on hand pies sprung up as Kathy was working on her previous book, Pie Squared, which featured both sweet and savory slab pies.
During Pie Squared, when I would look in my refrigerator and there'd be a little bit of dough, some filling left over that, you know, I'd made too much, so there was a cup of filling. And I hate waste, and I was always looking for ways to feed us. And
sure.
So I would just make up little hand pies, little shapes, small galettes, whatever I could do to use up that excess. And it got me thinking about all the other ways that we can form pastry to surround filling.
The title, When Pies Fly, builds on the punny nature of her past books.
I was trying to find a clever title, frankly, because I didn't think I wanted to follow up Pie Squared with something like The Book of Hand Pies. I wanted it to be fun. But it also started to become clear that the words When Pies Fly could be interpreted in 2 different ways. And I was happy with that. One is that these are pies that have a lot of international flavors. And so imagine your pies are flying around the world being inspired by all these international flavors.
Sure.
And international forms, whether it's the empanada or a strudel or other kinds of pastries wrapped around filling, which is my new definition of pie.
Right. You have this new definition of pie.
I do.
So you just alluded to some of the forms that it can take. Mm-hmm. But what really, can anything be a pie then? I mean, anything with a filling and a pastry shell.
That's my feeling.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know why not.
And even puff pastry, even
yes.
It doesn't have to be at all butter crust
no.
to be a pie.
And I have 13 different crusts in this book, including a buttermilk-based crust that I use for fried pies, and
they
smell just like a funnel cake at the carnival.
Oh,
they're
delicious.
Great.
Yeah. For Kathy, she's spent so much time on pies for her last 2 books that sometimes it's hard not to think about pies, but that informs her creative process, she told us.
If you're a pie maker, everything starts to look like pie. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm out for dinner and I have something delicious and I think, this would make an interesting pie filling. And that's how I got to the Calbee short rib hand pie, for instance.
I was
out for dinner and I'm like, this is delicious. How can I get this into a pie?
Yeah.
So I learned how to make strudel with this book. And I had always imagined strudel that you needed a family of 30, you know, all sort of, you know, hefty German women
sure.
who would stand around a massive table and stretch dough to like the size of Rhode Island.
Right.
And as it turns out, strudel is a home cook solution often to repurposing leftovers and feeding more people.
Right.
And really, you're only stretching it to about the size of a kitchen towel. And
yeah.
This is not a hard thing to do. You can do it alone.
Now back at the Civic Kitchen, we're prepping some rough puff pastry for a range of uses with Kathy.
It's three recipes in the book. The one that I just love is this stromboli that we're making here tonight. Yes. It is a fantastic recipe.
Tell me about it. What's in it?
So you take your puff pastry and you roll it out to that same sort of 10 by 6 shape. And I'm going to paint the bottom with a mixture of tomato paste, grated garlic, and smashed anchovies.
Oh, yum.
Yum.
Love anchovies.
Yeah, and so you just smear that on the bottom. And then you layer cured Italian meats, provolone, roasted red pepper, artichoke hearts, olives, little mozzarella balls,
okay.
A little bit of oregano, some olive oil, a little bit of balsamic, and then you lattice the top, which is pretty easy. It's
right.
Just strips that you put across. Paint it with an egg wash, sprinkle it with Parmesan cheese, and bake it for about an hour. It is, I call it like the big brother to a calzone.
Sure.
And I've taken it to parties, and I'm not kidding when I say that if you like put it down on the table and you turn around to say hello to the host, when you turn around, it's gone. And then people chase me down at the whole party like, what is in that? That's amazing.
Yes.
And that's been the result every single time I've made it.
And for the sweet pastry, Kathy is making an adaptation of a recipe in When Pies Fly, the fresh apricot breakfast pastries. Kathy has prepped some small squares of her rough puff pastry, and she's topping each with a dollop of a fruit mixture.
I'm going to put a tablespoon of a pear puree. Imagine an applesauce, but made with pears and a lot of cardamom.
Yeah, and that's what you have going on the side.
I do,
here, right?
Yeah. It's looking really, it's almost done over here.
Yes.
It's broken down. You can see it's a little bit chunky.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just smashing it with a mashed potato thing. Get it nice and smooth. And then we made a pastry cream, which is also scented with cardamom, and that will go on top of the pear puree, and then on top of that is a streusel with a little nutmeg in it, and oats, and flour, and butter, and sugar, brown sugar, and so it's this great textural, buttery, crispy puff pastry, the smooth and spicy pear puree,
sure.
The creamy custard, and then that crunchy streusel. It's
wow.
Kind of fantastic.
It sounds delicious.
Yeah.
For Kathy Barrow, the goal is combating dough phobia, that fear of pie making that many people can have.
I have given up my dream of making everybody make their own dough. And I'm perfectly happy if you buy store-bought dough and put one of my lovely fillings inside it, because I feel that if you do that and you have success, then over time you're going to be saying, I wonder how much better this would be if I could make my own dough.
Sure.
So it's sort of like leading them to dough making.
And her big secret to ridding home bakers of dough phobia? Her from-scratch rough puff pastry.
Puff pastry is the way you win the holidays. I'm convinced of it. If you have puff pastry in the freezer, you're ready to go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Homemade puff pastry.
Homemade.
In the freezer.
Every time.
You win the holidays.
That's right.
I love that. I love that.
That's Kathy Barrow, author of When Pies Fly, baking from the Civic Kitchen in San Francisco. And now, back to our conversation with Chris Taylor and Paul Arguin, authors of The New Pie. Now, where do you find inspiration for your pie recipes? I mean, I know in some of the head notes and things, we get a glimpse of how you find inspirations, like the toffee cream pie with crunch, for instance, I think you said was inspired by homemade Kit Kat bars.
Yes.
And sort of emulating those flavors. But the creations, the pies in your books are just, I think, for people who haven't looked at the book yet, this is like unlike any pie you've probably ever had before. You have some of the classics, right? But you've got Thai iced tea with whipped cream ice cubes. You've got like an all-in-one Thanksgiving pumpkin pie with a pecan pie gravy, like these really, really inventive flavors. And we'll come back to how they present themselves visually, too. Yeah. But where do you come up with the flavor concepts?
Truly everywhere. I mean, we spend a lot of time together. And I mean, we can list everywhere that we've ever been that we've had pie ideas, because it's happening constantly. Even while we've been here in San Francisco walking around, we'll just stop and Chris will say, what about, and we'll just start riffing on this, and we'll throw ideas back and forth. So it can be something as simple, we're having a cocktail before dinner, and there'll be some unusual flavor that's in that cocktail. They say, we need to build, a pie around, Angostura bitters, or just something like that. And so constantly.
And you capture all these ideas, write them down somewhere, and bring them back and start testing them.
We've got a gigantic list of ongoing pie flavors and combos of things that, you know, we want to try, or we'll write it down in multiple iterations. We can do that with, you know, peaches. We could do that with plums. We could do that with, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And in different ways to think about it. Sometimes we'll have a little more extensive notes like, oh, this would be a good cream pie, or this could be a fruit pie, or what if we added this to a nut pie? You know, just little things like that. But we try to keep a running list just because it does come up. I have little notes all throughout my phone of things that I'll just write down. And then sometimes a couple months later, I'll be looking for something else and going, oh, that was a great pie idea. I should add that to the big list now. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, but we'll, in the farmer's market, when we'll see a new piece of produce that we're not familiar with, we'll take home that unusual fruit and just like, what does this do? I've never worked with this before. It's actually quite tart. You know, it's quite firm. Oh, it falls to mush when you cook it. Who knew?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Or new cocktails, you know, breakfast cereals, candy bars, you know, just sort of anything that we see, you know, sort of becomes pie inspiration.
Yeah. And I think for people who pick up the book will realize that, because you have whole sections on cocktail focused pies and you use some alcohol in some of those as well. Sure. Mm-hmm. And I loved the great little tip on buying the small bottles of alcohol,
because you
need a little bit of Grand Marnier or something and you don't necessarily need the whole bottle. Get the little 1 ounce, 2 ounce.
Itsy bitsy teeny weeny little bottles for martinis.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And now for pies too. So, of course, the book is The New Pie, and the word new, I think, is really important. Although I want to talk about the cover. So it's an apple pie on the cover. Yeah. How'd you decide, and the technique for making the apple pie is, I think, new for many people. You sous vide the apples?
Correct.
So how'd you, one, decide that this would be the cover shot? Was that a tough decision, an easy decision? It's sort of a classic pie, right?
Tough decision, in fact. Yeah, because of all the unusual pies, so we went through all the photography, which, you know, the photographer we had did such a great job.
Yeah.
And so we had tons of great potential choices that we could use. It wasn't our first thought. It was actually our publisher who suggested, I think you should do this one. It's a very traditional looking pie. And so our first thought was, gosh, why take the most traditional looking pie in the book? And really it is. I think it's a stunning looking pie.
Yeah.
I think it has a great curb appeal for people to look at it. But then also the fact that it's made with a new and modern technique, I think that's what sells it, that you're able to make a much better apple pie that solves a whole lot of the problems in traditional pie making by using sous vide.
And do you use sous vide in other places other than the apple pie?
In the book, certainly, yeah. So there's several fruit pies that make use the sous vide. I think there's blueberry, the maple blueberry, the shaker lemon, the cranberry raspberry one.
Chocolate covered cherry.
Yes, the chocolate covered cherry. There's one of the plum affogato.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a handful.
Good handful, but not all of them. So if you don't have a sous vide in it, or it frightens you or something like that. Yeah. There's certainly plenty of other methods that are for the other pies. But it does several things for you. So it's not just a gimmick, a way to sort of, you know, make it a different way of making a pie. When you're able to cook the fruits to the exact temperature where the pectin is going to set, you're not going to overcook the fruits. The fruits will have transformed from that raw to a cooked flavor, which is what you want.
Right.
But you don't want them to fall apart. So if you the fruit will still hold its structure, but it'll be softer that you can chew through it.
Right.
So it really, and blueberries in particular, they're whole still. They're whole. They're spherical. They pop in your mouth, but they are not raw. They're cooked blueberries that hold their shape and have a nice chew. The other thing it helps you do, in addition to having the perfect fruit texture, you can manage your juices.
Okay.
And so sometimes if you're making an apple pie, it's going to be a very juicy apple.
Right.
When it cooks, it has released a ton of juice. And if you didn't match that with your thickener properly, your pie is going to be soupy.
Right.
On the other hand, it could be a drier apple, and now it's pasty. When you're cooking it sous vide, with this apple method, it allows you to measure, because once it comes out of the water bath, you measure how much juice came out of those apples, and you can now thicken it absolutely perfectly. So now you have these perfectly cooked chunks of apples inside the pie that's going to be surrounded by the absolute right amount of apple goo. That's thickened perfectly. It's holding it all together. When you slice that pie, it will hold its shape. It's not going to slump over and be a mess all over your plate. It's going to be a standing up perfect wedge of pie. That's not gummy. It's not gelatinous. It's fantastic.
It is fantastic. It's such a fantastic application of the sous vide technique. Where did you get that idea? Did you see someone else doing that and say, I want to do that too with pies? Or did you make that connection on your own?
It really was for the competitions. So, because there's so many times that we'll have spent a lot of time developing a recipe for competition. And then something might go wrong. And now that's a year's worth of work that's just kind of, down the tubes,
right?
Because the apples I bought in Florida weren't as juicy as the apples I had back in Atlanta or something like that. Yeah. And so I kept thinking, how can I control for some of these issues? And that's where I started thinking about using sous vide. I was using it for other things. I was making eggs. I was making steaks. And it was that precise technology. And so then, I went back to our cookbook library and started finding, what I could learn about, because we're not food scientists. So I wanted to learn, so I didn't know, what the gelling point of pectin was, but it's there in some references. So I think, modernist cuisine is where I found that. How hot do you have to cook your fruits to get them to that point? And, doing my homework, I picked up all these little tidbits and then decided, let's just start trying to make pies this way.
Yeah. You have this long list of pie ideas, right, that you're sort of always carrying around. Are there pies that you've tried that you just haven't been able to figure out how to get them to work?
Yes.
Flavor combinations? Could you have any, at the top of your head?
Yeah, yes. The one that comes to mind is mine. I've been working on it for years, is an Arnold Palmer pie.
It's so simple. Okay.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah. But just getting... a nice, a strong tea-flavored substance that can stand up against any amount of lemon, because lemon can be very overpowering if you do it with something like a curd. And so it just hasn't worked out. I've tried a couple times. Every now, I think maybe 3 or 4 years, I've gone back to it with different methods and different thoughts and just haven't gotten it to the point where I'm really happy with it yet. So that one's still on the list.
Yeah, okay. You need to make a strong enough tea flavor to stand up to the lemon
that's not bitter.
Bitter, exactly. Yeah, right. So it's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you good luck on that adventure. Do you both have a favorite pie in the book? I know it's hard to pick a favorite.
There's so many good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. We do. We've come up with an answer because we've been asked this a lot.
Okay. Yeah. And I think the one that keeps coming to mind is, it's called Cheese Course.
Uh-huh.
So it's one of the last recipes in the cocktail chapter. So it's a walnut pecan, crumb crust, and then a layer of fig jam made with, port, wine.
Right.
And then it's topped with a creamy layer of mascarpone cheese that has some gorgonzola dolce blue cheese in it.
Right.
And it's a dessert pie. I think some people thinking blue cheese.
It's got to be savory, but no, it's a sweet dessert pie.
Yeah.
The flavors just all work so well together.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good. It's really not like anything we'd ever made before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds delicious. We've mentioned Rose, obviously, Rose Levy-Barenbaum a number of times. Mm-hmm. We mentioned Kenji, you mentioned modernist cuisine. Are there books or particular cookbook authors that have really been influential to you sort of beyond those?
Oh, yeah. I have to say the very first baking book that I bought for myself, was In the Sweet Kitchen by Regan Daly.
Okay.
It was an IACP, best book of the year a few years ago. And that book sort of blew my mind because it's just so encyclopedic, So when I got it, I was just amazed what all can be done in baking. And there was, so many different combinations, and she had a raspberry pie, and she made things with persimmon, and this, I think it was really the first time I'd ever seen a recipe that called for like a bittersweet chocolate. And so it was just, I learned so much just from that, and that really sparked my interest in baking because that book was so comprehensive.
Yeah. What do you think makes a great cookbook or a great baking book?
I think several things. I think one, I think good photos. I think for baking, I think people really need to see the end product. I think that's really helpful. I think nowadays you have to include weights in your measurement ingredients. Yeah. That level of precision is so easily, you can get a kitchen scale now for $10.
Right.
So I really think that's important.
That's the very first thing I look for, in fact, is in any new baking book, how do they manage flour? And so I want to know, when you tell me cup of flour, are you telling me a 4 ounce cup of flour, a 5 ounce cup of flour? And if you don't tell me, I really am nervous about cooking anything.
Yeah. So Yeah. I mean, weights are so important in baking, and we have Rose to thank for that, right?
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely. She really introduced that
to
U.S. cookbooks.
Yeah.
Are there any other books that are really interesting you at the moment? Any current books? Books you're watching or
you
authors?
Non-cooking books?
Cooking books. Yeah. Or any books. Yeah. We'll take any book recommendations. Yeah. What are we reading?
I'm trying to think because we do buy a fair number of cookbooks.
I saw Dominique Ansel's coming out with another one. I'm excited about that.
Yeah. His first one was really good too. I thought Sister Pie was a good read.
Yeah.
She has some fun stuff. I thought it was interesting that when we got her book, she has a beet pie.
Okay.
And we also have a beet pie in our book. And I thought, I think this is great. We can live in a world with two books that have beet dessert pies that are made completely differently.
Yeah. Right.
So I just thought that was really cool.
Right. So you entered your first competition 8 years ago, I think.
Yeah, 2011. Yeah.
2011. You'd baked, you said maybe 10 pies.
Mm-hmm.
How many pies do you think you've baked at this point?
I can't even estimate. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely hundreds. Hundreds. If not, I mean, between us, maybe over 1,000.
Sure.
Yeah.
Over.
I mean, there's 75 in this book, and I know we've baked those several times.
Right.
Tons,
yeah.
Well, let's put it to the test. So we always end with a little game. You've baked maybe 1,000 pies between the two of you. So we have our little secret ingredient cards here. I didn't shuffle them, actually, so feel free to draw from wherever within the stacks. But I want to see if we can put you to the test to see if you can make a pie based on whatever ingredients you draw. Some of them, of course, are savory, some not. There's four stacks here. We have vegetables, proteins, flavors, which are sort of spices and things like that. And then secret ingredients, which are just totally wild cards.
Okay.
So you can work together, put your minds together, draw as many or as few as you want, and maybe we'll do a couple rounds.
Okay.
Let's start with the first round. Draw whatever appeals to you, and let's see if we can come up with a pie that plays on those flavors.
Oh, dear.
No oregano. I think actually a lemon oregano pie would be good. Sort of like maybe a little bit of Greek character to it. I think you could do it with lemon thyme. I don't see why you couldn't do it with lemon oregano.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm thinking of it as maybe like a chess pie, a lemon oregano chess pie.
That's not bad.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take it. How about another one?
All right. Let's try secret ingredient. Pickle.
Oh, pickle pie.
I think there is a bakery that makes a dill pickle pie. I think it's actually a sweet pie. Yeah.
I just saw a
news article about it the other day.
Okay.
Yeah. It can be done, I guess. I don't know. There's not a lot you could pair with it.
Yeah. Well,
I guess I'd start with maybe a custard because I guess the if you're doing something vinegary, you can help set your eggs, I guess. So you can, if you're doing a custard base with the pickles.
Yeah.
Using like the pickle juice, maybe?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And maybe lime juice, sort of like a key lime pie, but maybe with some pickle juice and some lime juice to set the eggs in the condensed milk.
Sure.
That's a tricky one for a pie.
I'm not sure that would make me happy. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not a pickle person. Yeah.
All right. Let's do another one. Let's draw two this time. Let's see if we can take two flavors and combine them into a pie. We're going to get it more challenging here.
Want to grab a vegetable?
Sure. All right. The vegetable, we have cauliflower.
Oh, come on.
Cauliflower. Okay.
And paprika. Okay.
All right. Oh. A cauliflower paprika pie.
I guess cauliflower is kind of neutral. Okay.
True.
All right.
Yeah.
So again, I guess I would start by trying to research the properties of cauliflower. I think if I were to maybe puree it and remove a lot of liquid, I could try and use it, you know, like a pectin thickener.
Okay.
I don't know. How about that?
Yeah. I think this might be better as a savory pie.
Rather than a sweet pie?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, it's true. Cauliflower is neutral.
Yeah, cauliflower being neutral, then I'd say another strong flavor. We'd have to add a third flavor that would potentially... Oh, you're going to draw a flavor.
No, basil, but then I don't know if that gets us...
Yeah. That didn't help.
Maybe let's add a protein.
Yeah,
if we're going savory, let's see what we get here.
Shrimp. This is shaping up to be one of Paul's favorite pies. All of Paul's favorites have come out to play.
All right, I'll run screaming.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can we do it, though?
I think it could be done.
You just might pass. You might not want to eat it.
Oh, I guess so. Now we're going to make it. So we're in savory territory.
Yeah.
This is going to be.
I'm thinking maybe something like a modified curry, like cauliflower, shrimp, paprika, maybe some curry powder, some of those deep spice notes.
A curried shrimp quiche
kind of thing.
Of pie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Why not?
Might take a couple passes to really get it there.
Yeah. All right, should we do one more? Final round.
Yeah.
Sky's the limit. Let's see.
Okay. All right, I'll do secret ingredient. Ooh, kumquat.
Oh, okay.
Nice. Oh, yes.
Easy. There we go. Yes.
And what, vegetable?
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, and bell pepper.
All right. Kumquat and bell pepper pie.
That's not bad. Yeah. So some, I'd take the red bell peppers. I'd like the kumquat to dominate though.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So,
but I think that grassiness of the pepper with the kumquat, I think could work well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely the whole kumquat, so you get the bitter edge from the rind.
Yes. We've made some kumquat pies before that are pretty good. Yeah, I think that could work.
Are they usually custard pies?
Yeah.
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 And in fact, you can sous vide the kumquats.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we might need one more flavor to finish those off, but I think that could work with the pepper and the kumquat. Yeah. Not sure of what flavor would really round that out. Kumquat, bell pepper. I wouldn't say acid because you're getting that from the kumquat.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Maybe a berry, something to match. Or maybe a spice, but I'm not sure what.
Almonds.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, because almond and a little bit of the orangey kumquat, that would go together. Yeah. Yeah, maybe like a Di Serrano alcohol.
I like it. I like it. All right. Well, this was great. Paul, Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
Yes.
Let's head now to Omnivore Books in San Francisco to chat with Celia Sack. Hi, Celia. How are you?
Hi, Brian. I'm fine.
Great. We just had Chris and Paul on to talk about the wonderful Pie Duo, to talk about their new book, their first book, The New Pie.
Excellent.
And I'm hoping you have something to share
with
us. Oh,
God. I love them. They were sweet so as their pie.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember. I think they started out by winning a really huge pie contest,
yes.
Right?
Well, and I love their backstory, actually. Did you hear their backstory?
Remind me.
So they met online, or they met through mutual friends, actually, and their first date was over the phone, and they decided they both owned cookbooks and they were going to pick a book that they both owned and bake through it together. And the only one they shared was a Rose Levy Barenboim book. And so they made, I forget the recipe, but it's an elaborate recipe. Yes. And we spent like 14 hours on the phone with each other for our first phone date.
That's great.
That's how their relationship began.
It was
over a Rose recipe.
Well, they have great chemistry and it's turned this into a wonderful book.
Yes.
One of the things that they were saying is, you know, some of the recipes may look complex or complicated to make, but if you follow them all the way through, they really, really work. And that's the mark of an excellent baking book. And Rose Levy Barenboim is one of those people that actually is always trustworthy like that. So it's really important for them to work well. And a perfect example is their pie crust.
Mm-hmm.
They talked a lot about how important that is to make it just right. And they have a very exacting recipe for it. And
right.
While a lot of people are very afraid of pie crust, they don't try to say it's simple, but they do try to make it as direct as possible. So you just follow along and you will get it.
Yes.
And while there's a beautiful picture of apple pie on the cover, there are really unusual pies within, like Pie of the Tiger. I love some of the names.
I know, they're great. Yes.
Which is this sort of striped chocolate and espresso cake pie that looks absolutely amazing. There are, all these sort of, there's a whole section of new fruit pies, raspberry, spiced apple cider, guava berry apple, maple blueberry, just combinations that you've never thought about. Shaking up shaker lemon pie.
Right.
Italian plum affogato. So it's really, really fun because they really are new pies. They're pies you've never thought to make before.
Yeah, really inventive. And there's lots of books on pie, obviously.
Yeah.
But they really bring a scientific approach to it too, which I think is so interesting, right? They sous vide some of their fruit, like some of these cooking techniques that aren't often applied to pies in particular, they really employ. And I think that's really interesting. In
yeah,
some of their
definitely.
Too.
It's, you know, it can put off some people, but people who are really into making pie, this is such a fun book to experiment with.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Celia.
Absolutely.
And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening. As always, you can find bonus content and recipes from all of our episodes on saltandspine.com. There, you'll find two recipes from the new pie, the apple and Aunt Melba's peach. Plus, you'll find two recipes from When Pies Fly, the antipasto stromboli and the fresh apricot breakfast pastries. Remember, if you like hearing from your favorite authors on Salt and Spine, and I hope you do, please click subscribe wherever you're listening. And of course, you can join the Salt and Spine community and support our show at patreon.com/saltandspine. Salt and Spine is proud to have storytelling partners like Edible San Francisco. In the current issue, hear from three women, Lenora Estrada of Three Babes Bake Shop, Janelle St. John of Pietisserie, and Elizabeth Simon of Revenge Pies, on how they're speaking out on behalf of women and minority-owned businesses, building up their operations and paying it forward to their communities. You can subscribe now to ensure you don't miss any compelling stories on how San Francisco eats at ediblesanfrancisco.com. Our show today was produced by me, Brian Hogan Stewart, and our kitchen correspondent is Sarah Varney. The Salt and Spine original theme song was created by Brunch for Lunch. Salt and Spine is recorded at the Civic Kitchen in San Francisco's Mission District. The Civic Kitchen offers hands-on classes and events for home cooks. You can find out more at civickitchensf.com. Thanks, as always, to Jen Nurse, Chris Bonomo, and the Civic Kitchen team, to Edible San Francisco, and to Celia Sack at Omnivore Books. We'll be back tomorrow with another story behind the baking books you love.